ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग दिस इवनिंग फ्रॉम द भगवद गीता चैप्टर 14 व्हिच इज कॉल्ड द थ्री मोड्स ऑफ मटेरियल नेचर एंड टुडे वी हैव अराइव्ड एट टेक्स्ट नंबर 21 व्हिच इज ऑन द बोर्ड बिहाइंड मी। We've been transliterated from the Sanskrit Devanagari script into the script Roman alphabet with a few special diacritic marks. That's so we can chant this text. It's also a mantra. Mantra means a sound that purifies the mind. So just by chanting, we'll become purified. So the procedure is I'll say each word or couple of words, and you say them after me, and then we'll do each line like that, each pada, responsively. Then, of course, we'll hear the translation, Prabhupada's commentary, and have some discussion. Right? So, text 21 after me. Arjuna
Uvacha
Kalingai Singunan Netan Patito Pavati Prabho Kim Acharya Katam Chaitam Tringunan Ativartate Arjunuvacha Gharlingai Stringunan Netan Patito Bhavati Prabho Kim Acharaktam Chaitam Tringunan Ativartate Arjuna Vacha Gharlingai Stringunan Netan Patito Bhavati Prabho Kim Acharaktam Chaitam Tringunan Ativartate
Arjuna Uvacha
Arjuna Uvacha
Karlingai Stringunan Etan
Karlingai Stringunan Etan
Patita Bhavati Prabho
Patita Bhavati Prabho
Kim Acharo Katham Chaitam
Kim Acharo Katham Chaitam
Hindunam
Ativartate
Arjuna
Vacha
Karlingai
Stringunan Etan Patito Bhavati Prabho
Kim Acharaktam Chaitam
Hindunam Ativartate
Arjuna
Vacha Harito Bhavati Prabho
Kim
Achara Katam Chaitam
Tringunan
Ativartate Arjuna Vacha Karlingai Stringunan Etan Patito Bhavati Prabho Kim Acharaktam Chaitam
Chindranamativartate.
Arjuna Vacha.
Alingai Chindranandetam. Patito Bhavati Prabho.
Kimacharatasamjaitam.
Arjuna
Vacha.
Arjuna said,
By which?
Singai.
Symptoms.
Three.
Gunan.
Qualities.
Etan,
all these.
Atitaha,
having transcended.
Bhavati is.
Prabho,
O my Lord.
Kim, what?
Achara,
behavior.
Katam, how?
Cha, also.
Etan, these.
Tin, three.
Gunan, qualities.
Uttivartate,
transcends.
Translation.
Arjuna inquired,
O my dear Lord,
by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior, and how does he transcend the modes of nature? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, Arjuna's questions are very appropriate. He wants to know the symptoms of a person who has already transcended the material modes. He first inquires of the symptoms of such a transcendental person. How can one understand that he has already transcended the influence of the modes of material nature? The second question is asks how he lives, what his activities are. Are they regulated or non-regulated? Then Arjuna inquires of the means by which he can attain the transcendental nature. That is very important. Unless one knows the direct means by which one can be situated always transcendentally, there's no possibility of showing the symptoms. So all these questions put by Arjuna are very important, and the Lord answers them. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Dutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Navane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Sindhavari Paschacha Desa Tarana Umang Dhyanam Timmadam Dasya Dananjana Shalakaya Chaksudam Viritam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.
So three questions now that Arjuna asked, having had the whole idea of the modes of material nature explained to him, and then also explain how when one can transcend, to go beyond the control of these three modes, then he no longer sees birth and death in the material world and is able to know the Supreme Lord and attain the nature or the abode of the Lord. So therefore, questions. And actually, so first question is, concerns the linga, the signs or symptoms. These refer to ones that are apparent to myself. Looking at myself, how can I tell whether I've transcended the modes or not? And the second one is about that's public. How does he act? How does he behave? Achara. His behavior. And then the final, and how do you go about doing this? So actually the remainder of this chapter will be concerned with answering these questions. And we'll start today with the answers. 22, 23, 24, and 25 are all the next verses are all combined together with a single purport in which Krishna answers the first two questions, and then 26 and 27 the final question, and that'll be the conclusion of this chapter. So let's go ahead and start. I'll start with I'll break these up. Because text 22 is answering pretty much the first question. What are the signs by which one can know he's transcended the modes? And then 23, 24, and 25 seems to talk more about his behavior. So let's just do 23. I'll read the text. It's not up here, so I'll just read it. So the answer comes, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava vadeshti sampravrittani na navrittani kankshati. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear. That's it. Three things are mentioned. Prakasham, illumination or clearness. That's the mental characteristic of the mode of goodness. Serenity, clear, serene consciousness or awareness. Pravrittim means attachment or endeavor. And moham, which means illusion. So these are the three, you might say, mental characteristics of the modes of material nature. Illumination, how does Prabhupada translate them? Illumination, attachment, and delusion. So when they are present, any one of them is present, he doesn't long for it, doesn't desire it. Or when any of them is gone, he doesn't regret it. That's the first, that's the mental characteristic. So let me read Prabhupada's purport to this. Arjuna submitted three different questions, and the Lord answers them one after another. In these verses, Krishna first indicates that a person transcendentally situated has no envy and does not hanker for anything. It's generally characteristic. Nasochati, nakankshati. He doesn't, attraction or aversion. This is a general symptom of being in the material world. Our senses are present, and objects of the senses are there, and we desire those things which satisfy our senses. and then we hate those things which obstruct the satisfaction of our senses. So I want a candy bar. I desire it. My little brother grabs it first. I hit him. Those two things go together. This is desire and hate. Desire and hate. This is the peace movement should understand this, by the way. They want love and not war. But actually these two things go together. As long as one has material attachments for things, then one is going to oppose or despise, hate, or be adverse to any of those things that block my attachments. So one has to get rid of the two sides of the same coin, this desire and hate. So the whole coin has to be discarded. Not just, you can't just have one side, the desire side, and get rid of the hate side. This is everyone, not just in India, but anywhere, people who are on a spiritual path of advancement, they know these things. Prabhupada continues, when a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. This has already been discussed extensively in this chapter, how a person is usually situated more prominently in one of the modes or another, and the mode of goodness, mode of passion, or mode of ignorance. Generally, when material nature is creating things, it's in the mode of passion. When it maintains, when things are being maintained, mode of goodness is prevalent, and when things are being destroyed, then this is called tamaguna, the mode of ignorance or darkness. But also there are psychological states. Our minds, which are also part of the system of material nature, tend to be situated in one of those modes or another, or some mixture of them. So when one is in the mode of passion, there's a strong impetus for fruitive activity, desiring different things in the world. I strive very hard to get them. Sexual desire is a sort of central activity of the mode of passion, but then all the other things that go along with that, including extensive economic development and pursuit of what referred to sometimes as the subtle form of sexual desire, desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. And striving hard to get these things. So any kind of materially ambitious activities, all that's considered to be in the mode of passion. What is in the mode of passion? So the consciousness is obsessively focused on some object of desire. And because one's in the mode of passion, as soon as one attains the object of desire, one immediately wants something else. It's not that now I'm satisfied. One keeps on going. As I've discussed a number of times, this particular country and civilization we're living in right now is characterized by an overdevelopment of the mode of passion. Formerly, Prabhupada has mentioned, the standard of advancement is the mode of goodness, where a person is detached, mentally clear, alert, inquisitive, and peaceful in disposition. This is the position from which actually knowledge can begin. And this is the mode of goodness. And then the tamogun, the mode of ignorance or darkness, characterized by sloth, laziness, inertia, procrastination, despair, depression, insanity is the mental, not getting anything done. This is the mode of ignorance. Also the mode of ignorance is increased. So these are the three modes of nature as they condition us. Now, Krishna says the mode of goodness is better than the others because it is the condition under which knowledge develops. They're ranked. Mode of goodness is best, mode of passion is next, and mode of ignorance is the worst from this point of view. But even in the mode of goodness, one is still a materially conditioned soul. But anyone who's normally in this material world and in the body is conditioned by, that is bound by, the mode of material nature. And they are impelled, or we, I should say, we are impelled to act by that mode. Sometimes, of course, we go back and we're not always consistently in one mode or another, but generally one or another dominates us. That's why it says, when the living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he's actually out of the body, then he's out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. That is to say, when one is really liberated, then out of contact with material nature, then the modes are not working on us. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. He should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord so that his identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. When one is conscious of the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. One does not need this material body, and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material modes in the body will act. But the spirit soul, the self, is aloof from such activity. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. Thus transcendentally situated, the devotee becomes automatically freed. He need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. I'll try to clarify what Prabhupada is saying, because this text says, here are the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And one should, as Prabhupada said, be neutral. In other words, they're going to act as long as this body and mind are here. They're going to act. But if one is transcendently situated, one does not become implicated in those activities. Now, how is it possible? That will be that's the third question, but Prabhupada here indicates what does it mean? How is it that we come under the influence of material nature, control of material nature? It is not simply that we are in the body, but that we also act for sense gratification. To be in the mode of goodness, mode of passion, or mode of ignorance is simply to be engaged in different qualities of sense gratification. Even later on in this Bhagavad Gita, it'll talk about people in the mode of goodness like one kind of food, people in the mode of passion like another kind of food, people the mode of ignorance, like another kind of food. It'll be described. You can tell by what kind of food you're attracted to. Like if you really like rotten stuff, it stinks like certain kinds of cheese. Anything's rotten and decayed, you like that, then you're in the mode, that's mode of ignorance. You're attracted to that. Really stuff that is really hot, super spicy, and so on, that's mode of passion. Stuff that is mild, sweet, pure, mode of goodness, and so on. But anyway, in any case, one is eating for material enjoyment. All kinds of things will be described like this in the 18th chapter. Austerity in the three modes, penance in the three modes, charity in the three modes. Now, so you can get ideas more of how people act and what the symptoms are like this. So, but all of them, as long as one is acting to enjoy in this world, that means we are entangled. And that causes us to identify ourselves with the material body. We develop a sense of I and mine. That I am the body, and that the things around the body, they are for me. I'm here, and these are all the things that are in relation to me. So I'm the center of enjoyment. So long as I act that way, I'm the center of enjoyment, and here. Somehow somebody put in front of me this whole different array of different things to enjoy. This is material consciousness. And we act in that way. But that binds us. That binds us. Once you simply understand this, and why is this so? Krishna says this in the 5th chapter, Yehi samsparasaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate, that those pleasures which arise from the contact between our senses and the sense objects are in fact the cause of all suffering. Krishna uses the word dukkha. This is the same word made famous by Lord Buddha when he made the same point. Later on, that material existence is dukkha, it's suffering. And you notice that, and what is the suffering? Well, birth is suffering, death is suffering, old age is suffering, disease is suffering. These are the main things. Trying to hold on permanently to that which is temporary, that is suffering. This is our situation in the world. So what is the cause of this suffering? Trying to enjoy, bringing the senses into contact with the objects, and trying to enjoy that pleasure. Seems like a natural thing to do. Our senses need to do something, and it feels good, do it, as they say. But actually, that gratification of the senses causes all suffering. If you sit and watch television, you'll see about, I don't know, about 8 commercials in a half an hour, telling you different, presenting different things for you to get. None of them tells you this is the cause of suffering. It's the cause of happiness. This car, this perfume, this whatever it may be, clothes. Coca-Cola, all those things. They don't say this is the cause of suffering. And you see the people in the advertisements, they all look like they're in a state of transcendent bliss. You don't know what's in that they're drinking. this is all false. It's actually the cause of suffering. And the reason it's the cause of suffering is that by that activity of trying to enjoy in this world, we identify ourselves further and further with this material body. This identification with the material body is the deepest, it's described as a hridaya granti, a knot in the heart. and is by which the soul, the self, which is the Atma, which is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, identifies itself with something which is temporary, full of ignorance, and subject to all kinds of suffering. The self actually was already liberated, but now by superimposition has identified with this or that particular material body with which the soul is associated, and then experience whatever is happening to this body as happening to me. So it is these activities of sense gratification which rivet us into the body and make us in a state of bodily consciousness. And so that bodily consciousness is characterized by the idea that I am the enjoyer, and everything in I am the body, and I am the enjoyer, and everything in relationship to the body is enjoyable by me. That's our state of consciousness. So Prabhupada says it like this. When one gazes oneself in devotional service to the Lord, the identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. How is that so? What the devotional service of the Lord means, I now engage in activities to please the senses of Krishna. Krishna is a person, that means he has senses. And so devotional service means I act to satisfy Krishna. Material activities means I act to satisfy myself. I am the center of enjoyment, and that's the sense of I, and the sense of mine is everything here around me. I am to enjoy. But in Krishna consciousness, the center of enjoyment is now Krishna. And my consciousness is now not that I am the enjoyer, but I am the servant of Krishna, so that Krishna is to enjoy. And everything around me, that's Krishna's. The sense of minus is now transferred to Krishna. And that I see that everything around me belongs to Krishna. Therefore I use it in his service. This is what's meant by neutral. For my own sense gratification, I don't have to give a thought to it. I simply am concerned with the satisfaction of Krishna. Will I be taken care of? Will I be happy? Yes, of course, because I'm now free from the bodily conception of life. See, I am now not driven by the modes of material nature. I am simply driven by the desire to please Krishna. That desire has not come from this material world. That's my natural position as a spiritual being, to satisfy the supreme spiritual being. So in relation to the modes of material nature, I am neutral. And so that if the symptoms of goodness, passion, or ignorance develop in relationship to different things in the world, I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I'm simply engaged in Krishna's service. Of course, in the things that are relationship to Krishna, that's a little different. If the mode of goodness is more favorable, then because devotional service begins when I have a principle of accepting and rejecting. Still, we have to have an accepting and rejecting principle. Right now, material consciousness, everything that satisfies my senses, I accept. And whatever doesn't satisfy my senses, I reject. So, but in devotional service, the principle is now, everything that is favorable for Krishna's service, for my service, or for other service, everything is favorable to Krishna's service, then I accept it. And whatever is unfavorable, then I reject it. That's my principle of accepting and rejecting. So sometimes what I need to do for Krishna service will be pleasing to my senses or may not be pleasing to my senses. Maybe in order to serve Krishna I need to live in some place that I don't particularly would otherwise want to live there, like Philadelphia, for example. Maybe I'd rather be in Seattle, Washington. Why am I in Philadelphia? Here's the service. It's favorable for Krishna service, so I'm here. Not that I'm in Philadelphia so much, but just an example. So that becomes the basis of accepting and rejecting. So naturally, this being neutral doesn't mean neutral toward your devotional service, but toward anything else, just the normal course of activities. Then I am neutral. I don't act for sense gratification. If one is not concerned with sense gratification, how will I live? This question comes up. And the answer is, don't worry about it. Krishna has made this promise to his devotee that you don't have to worry about your career or your life. I'll take care of your life for you. If you just surrender to me and absorb your whole consciousness serving me, I'll manage everything nicely. Don't worry about it. This is his promise to the devotees. Actually, we're working very hard to arrange our lives to our liking, but most of the time we're not that successful. And good or bad fortune, it comes anyway. This is the instruction of Narada Muni. Several places he gives this instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, the great sage, he says that actually when we are born in this world, how much happiness and how much distress we shall have, that is to say on the basis of our senses, that's already determined at the time of birth. Still today in India, if you go to a competent astrologer, they can tell you, it's a little frightening actually, how much a good astrologer can tell you just how much suffering and how much enjoyment you'll have in this world. You'll have money, you'll not have money, and so on. And you can try different remedies, but it's pretty much set. This is karma, because what an astrologer does, he knows from the previous birth, your karma is there, and then the astrologer can tell you, this is your karma. That's set. Okay. But Narada Muni gives an example of how this is so, that it's already determined. He says that everyone is working for happiness. We see that. Well, everyone's working for happiness all the time. That's the thing. And we see that no one is striving assiduously for misery. They don't do it. Nobody makes big plans, figures out, makes his strategic plan, works his business plan for the next 8 years for failure, for unhappiness. They don't do that. They all make plans for happiness. Yet you notice that misery or unhappiness or misfortune comes of its own accord, even though no one tries for it. No one goes to the temple of praise for it. No one makes offerings to the gods for it. Nobody. If anything, it still comes. So he says, actually, happiness is working on the same principle. We think that we have achieved some happiness because of our hard work and everything, but actually, it's coming because of Daiva. Because of arrangement from our past. This is his argument. Just as happiness, just distress comes of its own accord, so actually the happiness we are due in this world, that will come. Therefore, he said, don't waste your time trying to change anything. Accept whatever comes and use your time in the devotional service to Krishna. That way you become neutral. You look on, as we'll see later on in this description, you look on them as the same. You look on good fortune and bad fortune as the same. You don't see them. One is better than the other. Rather, all you look for is, how can whatever circumstances that comes, can I engage in the devotional service of Krishna? In that case, one is in the transcendental position and is not actually any more under the control of the modes of material nature. He is transcendentally situated. So Prabhupada says, one does not need this material body. That is to say, we don't need this body to stay alive. The body needs us to be alive. So we really don't need it. Life doesn't depend upon this body. And we go through so many changes of bodies all the time. We're the same living entity. Even in this life, our body is changing so much. When it finally falls away, get another body, or go to the spiritual world. In any case, we don't need it. We are eternal. So it says that one does not need this material body, and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. What dictations should we accept? We accept the dictations of Krishna. Sarva dharman putit jaja mam ekam saranam bhaja. You give up all these different dharma. Just, this is your dharma, mam ekam saranam bhaja. You take exclusive shelter of me. Amtam sarva bhakti vyom. I shall deliver you from all any sinful reactions. Masuchaha. Don't have to worry. The qualities of the material body, material modes in the body will act. You get up in the morning, the mode of passion is prevalent. You go to sleep at night, the mode of ignorance is there. So that will work. But as a spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activities. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. That's a fact. In devotional service, there's not any necessary desire that I should become free from this body either. If I am using it for Krishna's service, that's fine. Actually, the body doesn't belong to me, it belongs to Krishna as long as he keeps it functioning for me to engage in his service. That's his business. When he wants to take it away and take me back to Godhead, that's fine too. It's up to him. This is what's meant by neutral. And neither should I want to enjoy this world, neither should I want to reject the world. Thus, transcendentally situated, the devotee becomes automatically free. He need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. Because what he's saying is that by different practices, like Sankhya Yoga, you try to discriminate what is Purusha and what is Prakriti. And detach yourselves from Purusha, from Prakriti, become situated in the self. So there are many places how to discriminate between spirit and matter, and how to try to withdraw your attention from matter. But actually that's not complete to make one detached, just that activity. Because there are, in Sanskrit they're called vasanas. Vasana. Vasa means in the mind there are very subtle, unconscious impressions from previous births that impel us to act. And those things will not go away simply by this kind of conscious mental activity, these vasanas. That's why Krishna here recommends we will explicitly a couple of verses from now, the activities of devotional service. That completely, this one engages in Krishna service, and then one doesn't have to strive exactly to become free from the modes of nature. One is naturally free. One is naturally free. This is what Prabhupada is saying here. So then, that person who's naturally free, this is the consciousness. Is not a neither hates nor desires either illumination or attachment or delusion when they arise, but it's actually those things just go on of their own accord and remains engaged in Krishna service. So that's the description of how what are the symptoms. Now the next three verses will be a description of how that person acts, and I guess we'll have to wait for next Sunday to get to that part because we've run out of time. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. A moment for any questions?
You know, like the astrologers in India, you know, they call Panditji.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been watching since, you know, I remember when baby born and when he comes, you know, yeah, he's giving home, you know, work.
Yeah.
And always his name was in previous life, between, oh, I used to, you are, oh, I know every name falls in that, you know. So he never said you were a dog or cat or a bird or beast or, you know, all they said you were, you know, your name was Shri.
Oh, really, huh?
You know, never said, I heard they were saying, based on, you know, what we have been learning here, you know, we may have been a cat or dog.
Maybe they're all born in America. Everybody born in India is called a pious birth, huh? Maybe the previous. I don't know. Neither can I vouch anymore that the astrologers these days really know what they're doing. You know, that's the thing. When I looked a little bit at this Vedic astrology, one thing I could see, you have to be very, very smart to do this correctly. Before I became a devotee, I was looking at Western astrology, and it's very simple-minded compared to the Vedic astrology. So I don't know anymore that people are actually trained, really trained properly. I have to say that. But once in a while, I have seen some astrologers say same astonishing things. I remember the friend who was an astrologer, and the astrologer was looking at my friend's chart and said, your wife has three brothers. Just from his chart, your wife has three brothers. And he said, well, that's wrong, she only has two. And the astrologer looks at his, no, she has three. And he said, no, there's only two. Well, he said, you can have your wife ask her mother if she had a miscarriage or something. So his wife finally goes back to her country and asks her mother, you know, do you have a miscarriage? So it was a family secret that there was an abortion, actually. And she never told anybody. There was a third. So things like this happen that are quite amazing.
I was in a little boy, I was in the eighth grade, and I was sitting reading, and when I saw my hand, I was just telling, you know, like, you have a sister, and he was like, yeah, you said you're going to go in foreign country, I was born in the farm, boy, and you know, like, I never imagined you were going to foreign country. And you know, they said, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And most people have said more. It's not just chance, huh? They can tell you something. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, does creator have any control of creatures?
Of what?
The creator, I mean, Krishna, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just wondering, so we believe that the Krishna has created several creatures, including human beings.
Right.
So does he have any control on our mind, or why does he create a so miserable mind? I mean, more miserable mind than the...
What Krishna has created is a particular system which includes the laws of karma. And so when one becomes an embodied soul and a conditioned soul, then we become under the control of material nature.
So why the need of karma is there?
Why is the need of karma there?
You can call me ignorant, but I just inquire about
the karma. Why the need of karma is there? Well, Krishna's purpose is ultimately that the souls in the material world can eventually go back to Godhead. But we're not here for that purpose. We're here to try to enjoy. But the laws of karma shows that if you're going to enjoy, if you follow the laws of God, then you'll have good fortune. And if you break the laws of God, you'll have misfortune. This is karma and vikarma. Karma means you have to follow the injunctions of the Vedas, and then at least future births will be nice. So gradually this builds up, this is this vasana, a subtle impression in the mind. The disposition will be there actually to follow the laws of God. Gradually, if that develops fully enough, you'll become God's devotee and surrender to Him. Not everybody wants to do this. We're here to avoid Krishna. If we were actually, most souls don't come into this world. They're in the spiritual world. But those who are here in the material world, it means that all of us, we're basically like criminals. This is like the prison house. And some are first class prisoners and second class prisoners. Some are in the nice cells and some are in the dungeons. But it's all basically a prison.
But what's the main purpose?
To get you out. To get you out of the prison.
Okay, so I mean, what's the purpose in the spiritual world?
What?
What's the purpose of getting into the spiritual world?
Because that's where you belong. When you go there, you say, oh, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I wanted. This is who I am. And your happiness will increase forever, and together with Krishna, both of you will engage in pastimes of love.
So does happiness link with the Atma, spirit, or the human matter?
No, it's spirit. Spirit is Ananda. We are looking for happiness. Oh, everyone's looking for happiness, but where we're looking for it is not available. That's our mistake. This is called bewilderment.
I wonder why the spirit is linked with the material world. I mean,
because
God created
the material world. Why does the government create a prison?
And that is silly thing. I mean,
no. Same reason. Because there are people that don't want to. The free citizens are all those people who obey the laws. There are some people that don't want to obey the laws. So say, here I am. My constitutional position is I am the servant of Krishna. But suppose I get the idea, you know, why should he be God? Why can't I be God? And so we get this idea, and so Krishna says, well, you can't be God, you know, the position is taken already. But since you want that, you can come, here's the material world, and you can have at least the illusion that you're God. So everybody, we're all in the material world, and basically one way or another we've got a God project going. To lord it over others, to be the enjoyer, to be the controller. And we have to become free from this idea. We have to finally say, yes, Krishna, I am your servant, you're the enjoyer, I'm to be enjoyed by you, and I'm happy with it. I'm happy that you're God, and I'm happy that I'm your servant. Then we go back to Godhead. But it takes many lives for most of us to get to that point.
I really wish this should be taught in the schools.
I do too.
Every elder says that if you go to school, I've been to all the top schools in the world,
uh-huh.
and I got all the degrees from the university. But still, I feel, I mean, you have something really great to tell.
Thank you.
So that is very, very essential for every individual.
My spiritual master also wanted this to be taught in the schools.
Yeah.
He went to MIT, you know, and he went to MIT and he met with some professors and graduate students, and he said to them, "Why don't you have a department of the soul?" And they just looked at him like he was crazy. But he's very serious, because they think this is not a science, this is not knowledge. That's the unfortunate thing.
No, because this is a science of spirit or something.
Yeah, it's all Rajagun. They can't see any of this stuff. That's the difficulty. We shall try hard to get this in all the universities, and slowly people, you'll see it will happen. People have to be convinced this is just not some, you know, sentimental or fanatical thing. It's actually the science of God. It is a science. Okay, we should stop now. It's time for a few announcements.